the assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, since it was a slow week for sports this week, and there really isn't anything to catch up on, there are a couple topics, but basically what I did is from every sport, I've written down a couple topics that I'm just going to talk about, and so that's what we're going to do for today. So let's go ahead and kick it off with baseball. I'm going to do the Trop 5 second half storylines to look out for in Major League Baseball. So let's start it off with number 5, and are the Seattle Mariners a legit team? And they are coming into this All-Star break on a 14-game winning streak. And even before the winning streak, they actually were playing pretty well. Earlier in the season, they had a pretty decent winning streak going, and they are playing great basketball. They are playing great baseball. And, their starting pitching has actually put together some great starts. And then you've got the rookie phenom Julio Rodriguez, who's really turned it on, especially during this 14-game winning streak. He's really been the main reason. Him and Ty France basically have been a huge part of the offense, but also defensively as well. So while the Mariners are coming in on this 14-game winning streak, we'll see what happens with the second half of the season. But are they going to be a legit team? Are they, you know, this year we've got a change in the playoffs where we have 3 wild card teams. And so we've added a team who can make the playoffs. And are the Mariners going to be that team? At this point in time, I would say they are a pretty solid team, but I wouldn't call them a World Series competitor. And also, this is the Mariners. They are a team who has been known to play pretty well and then fall apart towards the end of the season, or definitely fall apart come playoff time. So we'll see if they are a legit team this season. They've definitely had a good first half of the season. And, you know, coming into the second half on a 14-game winning streak, which is the longest streak in Major League Baseball this year so far, we'll see what happens with the Mariners. But are they a legit team? That's always a question to ask with them. I don't think they have a shot at winning their division because they're about like 12, 13 games out from the Houston Astros, and the Houston Astros are one of the best teams in the league right now. So I don't really see them winning their division, but they could definitely be one of the wild card teams. And now that we have an additional wild card team coming into this season, going into the playoffs, the Mariners could possibly be that team. But we'll see what happens with them because, like I said, they are known to fall apart towards the end of the season. Then at number 4 on my top 5 MLB second half storylines, I have Albert Pujols, and this is his last hurrah. He hasn't officially announced his retirement, but it really does kind of look like this is going to end up being Albert Pujols' last season. It is nice to see that he is ending his career with the team who he began with the St. Louis Cardinals. It was weird to see him in other team uniforms over the last couple of years. But now it's nice to see him back in a St. Louis Cardinals uniform. The Cardinals are a legit team, so they could potentially go into the postseason. I don't know if I consider them one of the teams to win the World Series, but they definitely should be making the postseason, and they should definitely be a force for the rest of the year. You know, they've had a pretty solid first half of the season, and I don't expect them to let up. You know, their pitching is good, but also offensively, this is just a great offensive team, and Albert Pujols, so far, he's been a huge part of why they are. So it's going to be interesting to see if he's able to not only continue having a pretty solid second half of the season, but hopefully he's able to avoid injury because he is an older player. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens for the second half of the season for Albert Pujols, because he is a legendary player. And you would like to kind of see it end a good way. So hopefully he doesn't end up getting injured, and hopefully he's able to maintain his current level of play for the second half of the season, and hopefully into the playoffs. We'll be seeing what happens with Albert Pujols and the end of his stellar Hall of Fame career. Then at number three on my top five MLB second half storylines, I have the NL East. Who is going to win the NL East? Because we have four really good teams in the NL East currently, and they're all within about a half a game and a half of each other right now. You know, the New York Mets, they've led the way from the start of the season. They've been one of the best teams in the NL, but they've definitely dominated the East. The Braves started off the season really slow, but now they've turned it on, and they look like they're back in World Series form. Then you also have the Philadelphia Phillies, who started off the season really bad. They ended up firing their manager, Joe Girardi, midway through season. But they've managed to really, ever since his firing, really get going, and they're playing some great baseball, even in the absence of Jesus Christ, I'm drawing a big blank on Bryce Harper. Even with Bryce Harper's injury, Kyle Schwarber, he's really he's leading the NL in home runs right now. So offensively, the Phillies are playing spectacular baseball. But then you also have the Florida Marlins. Now, I don't really think the Florida Marlins have a shot at winning their division, but they do have a shot at making the playoffs just for that additional wild card spot. And I mean, really, the Marlins are they're a silent but deadly team. Like, you don't really expect them to be a halfway decent team, but they're actually pretty good, especially with their starting pitching. You know, they've got Sandy Alcantara, who's just had a phenomenal season. He's had a Cy Young season so far. And so it's going to be very interesting to see how the NL East shakes up. I definitely think it's a battle between the Mets and the Braves. And I wouldn't be shocked if the Mets end up choking the second half away and giving up the East to the Braves. But regardless, I still think both of those teams are going to make the playoffs, whether they win their division or just by a wild card. But you got to really look out for the Phillies and the Marlins as well. They're going to shake some shit up, and I think this division's really going to beat each other up because there's four solid teams right there. Playing great baseball, at least heading into the All-Star break, they were playing great baseball. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the second half of this season and ultimately who ends up winning the NL East. Then at number two on my top five MLB second half storylines, I have the AL wild card. Like I said, we are going to have three wild card teams this year. And right now, the wild card really is up for grabs. I mean, you've got the Tampa Bay Rays, who are just playing great baseball. They've been a solid team all season long. Then you also have the Toronto Blue Jays, who have had a very solid season, and then the Boston Red Sox and the Baltimore Orioles. And notice those are all AL East teams. And I mentioned them for the wild card because I think the Yankees have they have too much of a lead right now that they should absolutely win their division, and they're the best team in the league as well, so I don't really see them letting up at any point in time, even though they did get swept yesterday by the Astros. But the Astros are one of the best teams in the league as well. So I think these AL East teams are going to be battling it out for these wild card spots, and really, I wouldn't be shocked if three of those four teams ended up in the wild card, just because, like I said, the Rays, they're a dominating pitching squad, but they also can score. And then you got the Blue Jays, who could score. And then you've got the Red Sox, who have just been on a tear the last couple of months. But also the Orioles have been on a tear as well. Now, I don't really believe in the Orioles much. I think they're more just on their upswing right now. But I mean, still, they're playing great baseball at this current point in time. And the AL East is looking like they're going to beat each other up as well, just like the NL East. But then you also got to throw in the Cleveland Guardians, who are playing some good baseball right now. And then, like I said, the Seattle Mariners. So it's going to be interesting to see how the AL wild card shakes up, because you really legitimately have about six teams who are going to be battling it out for three spots. And I think that's going to be a battle all the way until the final game of the season. And then the number one top five MLB second half storyline is the best teams in the league right now. They are the New York Yankees. the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Houston Astros. Those are by far and away the best teams in the league. And they all dominate. I don't think any one of those teams has a weakness on their squad. I mean, the Yankees, they lead the league in home runs. Basically, they lead the league in everything offensively, and they are the best offensive team this season. Aaron Judge, he leads the league in home runs himself. He's definitely an MVP front runner this season. So really, the Yankees, and then their starting pitching has been lights out. So there's really nothing bad you could say about the Yankees. And then also with the Astros, there's really nothing bad you could say about them. I think their starting pitching is the best starting pitching in the entire league. And so they're just a really good team. They don't have any issues in their batting order either. Like I said, they just swept the Yankees for two games yesterday. And that's a big deal. I think they've beat the Yankees now five times this season to the Yankees two. And while there's still a lot of baseball left to play, those are the two best teams in the AL, and the Astros, they've dominated the Yankees thus far. So I don't think there's any weaknesses in the Astros game. And then you look at the Dodgers. And while the Dodgers have had to battle through some major injuries this season to a lot of their top-notch players, they still have been one of the best teams in the NL. And I don't think anybody is even close to them in the NL, at least at this point in the season. So the Dodgers are obviously the best team in the NL. So it's going to be interesting to see if these three teams are able to maintain their solid play that they've done throughout the first half of the season, see if they could carry it over into the second half. And then we'll see if there is anybody who could beat any one of these three teams. Because at this point, I would say out of all three of them, I think the Yankees are the best team. And that would be my World Series pick right now. But I could really see one of those three teams ultimately making the World Series and winning the World Series just because they're complete from top to bottom. And nothing really has fazed them, at least so far in the first half of the season. Then moving on to the NFL. Before I get to my top five topics in the NFL, Kyler Murray, he did end up signing in a five-year extension with the Arizona Cardinals yesterday. It's a $230.5 million five-year extension, so congratulations to him. $160 million of that is guaranteed, so that's also great for him. And he's basically going to be getting $46.1 per year during this deal. So this is a great deal for Kyler Murray and the Cardinals as well. I mean, really, I don't know what else they would have done if they weren't able to re-sign him to some type of extension. There really isn't anybody else better out there, and especially since the season's right around the corner, you definitely want to make sure that your starting quarterback is compensated and not having any issues with wanting to leave the team. So now the Cardinals can just focus on the upcoming season. There doesn't have to be any more of this talk about his contract situation. And this makes Kyler Murray actually the third highest paid quarterback in the league behind Aaron Rodgers, who's number one, and Patrick Mahomes, who's number two. So now Kyler Murray's number three with Deshaun Watson right behind him at number four. So that's good because Kyler Murray definitely deserves to be paid more than Deshaun Watson since that guy's a complete scumbag. But anyways, let's move on to my top five in the NFL. And so this topic for the NFL, I'm going to go with the top five Super Bowl contenders. I have not made any I haven't looked over anybody's schedule yet, really. And just because I mentioned these teams as contenders doesn't mean they're even going to be my Super Bowl pick at the once the football season begins and I start making my my season picks. These are just five teams who I look at from last year's roster and then also just kind of the moves they made this offseason. And they are the top five teams who I believe currently at this point would be the top teams who would be Super Bowl contenders for this upcoming season. So let's start it off with number five. I have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And the reason why they're on there, obviously, is because of Tom Brady. I mean, anytime you have Tom Brady as your quarterback, you have a shot at a Super Bowl. So even though he had the whole issue this summer with I'm retiring, I'm unretiring, I was going to go to the Dolphins, and now I ended up back with Tampa Bay. And Bruce Arians, he ended up stepping down. And so now they have Todd Bowles, their new coach, the defensive coordinator of the team, who took over as the head coach now. There's going to be no Rob Gronkowski, so that's going to be a big deal for Tom Brady and his game. But other than that, I mean, overall, the Buccaneers are still a very solid team. Like I said, as long as you got Tom Brady, you've got a shot. Their division's awful, so they should easily win their division. It's just, I don't 100% believe in the Buccaneers like I did last year. But like I said, they still have Tom Brady, so you still have a chance. Then the number four team on my top five Super Bowl contenders, I have the Kansas City Chiefs, and basically they're on there just for the same reason as the Tampa Bay Bucks. And this reason would be Patrick Mahomes. I mean, as long as you got Patrick Mahomes on your team, you are a legit Super Bowl contender. You should have a really good season, even though they are missing Tyreek Hill, who was a huge part of their offense over the last few seasons. Other than that, that's really their only loss. I mean, like I said, you still got Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback, and you still have Travis Kelce, one of the best tight ends in the league. You still have Andy Reid, one of the greatest offensive minds in the league as well. So I still expect the Chiefs to be a competitive team, even though their division just got a lot more difficult with all the moves the Raiders made this offseason. The Broncos made some moves this offseason. So it's going to be – and then you also have the Chargers as well. So it's going to be a difficult division, but, you know, Patrick Mahomes, he's carried this team for like 5 years now. They're still a Super Bowl contender, at least right now. Then at number three on my top five Super Bowl contenders for the upcoming season, I have the Green Bay Packers. Once again, it's basically the same reason as the last two teams. They've got Aaron Rodgers. As long as you got Aaron Rodgers on your team, you're a legit Super Bowl contender. He wants to win. That's why he's here. There really isn't going to be any offseason drama with him either, because they were able to get their extension done many months ago, so there isn't any drama heading into this season. They did lose Devontae Adams, which is a big deal, especially to their offense. But, I mean, you still have Aaron Rodgers, and as long as he stays healthy, this team is definitely a Super Bowl contender, 100%. Then at number two on our top five Super Bowl contenders, I have the Buffalo Bills. The reason why I have them here is this is kind of like the third year of this team. And usually the third year is a big year for teams like this with Super Bowl expectations. And I really think the Bills are ready to take that step forward and be not only a really good, solid regular season team, but a legit Super Bowl contender this year. They have been a Super Bowl contender the last couple of seasons, but I don't think anybody's been willing to put them above the Chiefs just yet. But I think this year they will take that step, and I think they should have high expectations. You know, you've got Josh Allen, who's really taken the league by storm since he was drafted, and he's been playing great football. But, you know, the rest of the team around him, picking up Von Miller this offseason really completes their defense. And it shores up a linebacker weakness that they had. It also gives them a veteran presence of a guy who's won two Super Bowls now with two separate teams. And in one Super Bowl, he was the actual MVP of the game. So I think the Bills are ready to take that next step, and I think they should have heavy and high expectations on them this season, because I personally think they are the best team going into this year, in the AFC at least. And then at number one on my top five Super Bowl contenders, it's got to be the Los Angeles Rams. They are the defending Super Bowl champions. And speaking of Super Bowl champions, they did just get their rings last night, and holy fucking shit. Those rings are beautiful. Just everything about them, there's so much beautiful detail in them. And so they're probably feeling great right now because they just got the rings. But, I mean, they are the defending champs, and whenever you're the defending Super Bowl champs, everybody's going to give you their best shot. But, I mean, you definitely have the pressure on you of repeating. And they should, because they're still a good team. You know, they still got Matthew Stafford. They still got Cooper Kupp. They still have Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey. They still have some of the best players at their positions on their team. Then you've got McVay, and they probably are happy to defend their title this year. And so we'll see what happens with the Rams, but I definitely think they should be number one on the top five Super Bowl contenders for this year. Now moving on to the NBA. I'm going to do the top five NBA offseason storylines. But before we get to the storylines, James Harden, he just signed a two-year $68.6 million deal with the Philadelphia 76ers. So he did take quite the pay cut. I think he was supposed to make $48 million this year. And instead, he's going to make like $33 million. So, I mean, he's still going to be making plenty of money, but he did take like a $14 million, $13 million pay cut. And also next year is going to be the second year on this contract is actually a player option. So it's really more of a one-year deal. And if he chooses to re-sign with the 76ers next year, he most certainly could. But he did what he said. He took a pay cut, and hopefully the 76ers can build around him and Embiid, because it's probably championship or bust, or that should be the mindset in Philadelphia right now. All right, so moving on to the top five NBA offseason storylines. Number five, the Golden State Warriors. They are the defending champs now, and what are they going to do this offseason? They did already lose Gary Payton Jr. To free agency. He ended up signing. I believe the Trailblazers. I can't 100% recall who he signed with, but he was a big piece of their team this year. So is that going to matter? Or are they going to make a move for Kevin Durant? I don't really think they're going to be that team that makes a move for Kevin Durant, but hey, you never know what's going to happen in the NBA. So what's going to happen with the Warriors? We definitely know Steph is still going to be there. We know Draymond's still going to be there. And we know Klay's still going to be there. So they still have those three, plus Steve Kerr, the coach. So what's going to happen here? You know, you've got Wiggins, who had a great season this year. Is he going to be able to continue on with what he's been doing? Are they going to make any big free agency moves or trades? Who knows? I don't think the Warriors need to make any major moves. I think they just need to make the typical kind of like depth moves where you're just really looking to build around Steph, Draymond, and Klay, because I really expect Klay to actually get back to form next year. And if Steph stays healthy, then the Warriors are golden. So that's my number five. Then at number four on my top five NBA offseason storylines, Donovan Mitchell. What is going to happen with Donovan Mitchell? It looks like the Utah Jazz are determined to trade him. I didn't think they were going to trade him. Once they got rid of Rudy Gobert, I assumed they were going to build the team around Donovan Mitchell. But it doesn't seem like that's the case. You're still hearing rumblings that he's going to end up being traded. So where is he going to be traded to? And what are they going to get for him? And I think this is a very interesting move just because Donovan Mitchell is one of the best point guards in the league. He's probably one of the top five in the league. Definitely top 10, but he's a solid player. And he's definitely going to make an impact on whatever team he ends up with. But where is he going to go? And is Utah really... are they really interested in trading him, or is this just more just rumors? But we'll see. But I definitely think him being trade bait is a big deal because he's going to impact whatever team he ends up playing for next season for sure. Then at number three on my top five NBA offseason storylines, the Los Angeles Lakers. What the hell are my Lakers going to do this offseason? So far, they really haven't done a lot. They've signed a couple of guys here and there. But what's going to happen with Russell Westbrook? Are we going to keep him or are we going to trade him? Every day, the story changes. One day, it's, oh, the Lakers are going to make it work. And then the next day, it's, oh, we're going to trade for this person. So it doesn't seem like a lot of people are interested in Russell Westbrook at this current point in time, including his own agent. But it's a big deal because I personally think we need to trade him. Even if it's for Kyrie Irving, I don't, like I've stated before, I don't want Kyrie Irving, but I think I'd rather have him over Westbrook, just because I think Kyrie and LeBron would work, their games work better together than Westbrook and LeBron. I don't really think Westbrook's game really meshes with anybody's game at this point in time. And so we'll see what happens with the Lakers, but I definitely think they have a bunch of question marks. Other than LeBron, what is going on with this team? Because Anthony Davis, you know, about a month ago, he's talking about how he hadn't picked up a basketball in like 6 months. And it's like, who the hell wants to hear that, dude? I mean, I understand you've been injured for a while here, but don't tell us you haven't picked up a basketball in forever, because that's unacceptable for us. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what the Lakers do here. If they end up trading for Kyrie Irving, because that seems to be the loudest thing that's going on here. But yeah, we'll see what happens with the Lakers. Like I said, they're really the only solid foundation we have at this current point in time is LeBron James. And even he's no sure thing anymore, just because he's been suffering injuries over the last couple of seasons. So is he going to turn injury prone? But regardless, we got to do something about Russell Westbrook. Hopefully we trade him. And hopefully we get something good in return. Like I said, I'd prefer no Kyrie Irving, but if that's the route we got to go, then that's the route we got to go. Then at number two on my top five NBA offseason storylines, I think this is going to come more out of left field for a lot of people, because I don't think a lot of people are talking about this angle in the NBA, but I am. And that would be, are the Dallas Mavericks going to get Luka Doncic some help? I think Luka Doncic is by far the future of the league. He's one of the best players in the league, and I think he could absolutely be the next champion, but he needs help around him. He doesn't have anybody else playing with him, and he definitely needs to work on his defense. That's the one aspect of his game where I would be critical of, is that he needs to step it up defensively. But other than that, Luka is by far and away one of the best players to step into the league, and he definitely has the potential to become the next superstar in the league. But the only way that's going to happen is if he starts winning some championships. And I don't think he's going to win any championships with the current Dallas Mavericks roster that they have right now. Now, I did mention Donovan Mitchell earlier in this segment, and I think Donovan Mitchell would be a perfect addition for this Mavericks team and could be the type of guy to put them over the edge. But that's definitely what I think the Mavericks need, is a player of that caliber to step onto this team and really be another driving force offensively, so it's not all on Luka, and so he could also improve his game defensively. So let's see what happens with the Mavericks. I really would hate to see them basically waste Luka's career by not getting him any help, but we'll see what happens with the Mavs. And I don't really think a lot of people are talking about that angle for some reason, but I most certainly am, just because I don't want to see Luka's career be a waste of time. All right, and then the number one top five NBA offseason storyline, in my opinion, is Kevin Durant. What is going to happen with Kevin Durant? Is this trade from the Nets really going to happen, or is this just more really some type of threat to get rid of Kyrie Irving? And if he does go somewhere, where is he going to be traded to? And we'll see. Yeah. And the reason why he's number one on my list is because obviously Kevin Durant is one of the best players in the league. I think you have to put LeBron at number one, just because of respect factor. And he is ultimately overall the best player in the league. Then you've got to put Giannis up there. You got to put Steph up there. But you definitely got to put Kevin Durant up there as well. Those are probably the top four best players in the league. And I mean, you can rank them where you want to, just based on semantics, because they're all spectacularly great players and they all dominate their teams and they all make great game-changing performances. So it's going to be interesting to see where Kevin Durant ends up. I personally would love to see him in a Lakers uniform. Him and LeBron, I think, would make a great duo, but I don't know if that's really in the cards for the Lakers. And really, I don't know if that's where Durant wants to go, because really it's going to be up to him what happens here. I really don't know if the Nets really want to give him up. I really don't know if Kevin Durant really wants to be traded. I think it's more of a play to hopefully get rid of Kyrie Irving. Because you can really just tell that, or at least from just from what you could see, it seems that Kevin Durant's kind of fed up with the Kyrie Irving bullshit and probably doesn't want to play with him anymore. So we'll see what happens with Kevin Durant. I think that's the number one storyline this NBA offseason, whether he gets traded or not. And if he gets traded, it's going to be very interesting to see where he ends up. All right, and then gonna end this today's show with some UFC topics. I'm going to name off the top five upcoming UFC fights for the rest of the year. So let's start it off with number five, and that is the return of Conor McGregor. When is it going to be? We don't have any official date. We don't have any official fighter. There's been some names thrown out there, but it definitely looks like at some point this year, Conor McGregor is going to return. He should return. He did used to be the face of UFC. He used to be the best fighter in UFC. I know he wants to come back, especially from that horrible injury he suffered in his last fight. You know he wants to come back, and you know he wants to do it big. And he still is a big name. He's still a big draw. I would expect pay-per-view numbers to be through the roof whenever he does end up ultimately coming back. But it's going to be interesting to see when he comes back and who he ends up fighting. But that's definitely, in my opinion, one of the top five UFC fights that would be upcoming at some point this year. Then at number four on my top five upcoming UFC fights would be the return of John Bones Jones. Another guy who hasn't fought in a couple years. He is mostly just due to legal troubles that he's had over the years, mostly getting arrested for DUIs. So that's kind of been the reason why John Jones hasn't been in the league for, he hasn't fought in quite some time. No date has been set, but it's looking like he's going to fight Stipe Miocic. Like I said, nothing set in stone, but you know, we keep hearing rumblings, especially over the last month or so, that John Jones is definitely going to be making his return, and it looks like it's going to be at some point this year. Really, UFC's only announced their fights through October, I believe, at this current point in time. So both Conor McGregor and John Jones could and should be getting scheduled here pretty soon. And if they do get scheduled, it will be probably more likely in November or December. But both guys, it's huge because John Jones was also before Conor McGregor. He was the dude. He was one of the biggest draws and huge fan favorite. And so it's going to be interesting to see both guys if they're able to still fight at the same levels that they used to. It's going to be interesting to see who they fight against, when they fight, and if they're going to be any type of good fighting shape. I know Conor McGregor, he's definitely been training his ass off. I don't know about John Jones, but both of them, it's going to be interesting to see when fights are finally scheduled for the two of them, what happens with that. All right, and then so at number three on my top five upcoming UFC fights, Charles Oliveira versus Islam Makhachev. I cannot pronounce that last name. I probably just completely butchered it. They are going to be fighting for the lightweight championship in Abu Dhabi at UFC 280 on October 22nd. Charles Oliveira, he is the current lightweight champion. And he just had a great fight, like a month ago-ish. But, you know, what I would refer to as a snaky type of fighter. He is great with the submissions, but he just has this, he's just kind of like a snake. He will just like suffocate a motherfucker. And it's just like, dude, all of a sudden you got this boa constrictor around you. I'm not really sure about his opponent. If I've seen his opponent fight, I don't recall seeing him fight, but Charles Oliveira, he's definitely by far one of the best fighters in the league right now, and I wouldn't be shocked if he ends up winning again in this upcoming match, but it's definitely a highly anticipated match just because Oliveira, he is one hell of a fighter, and he's been one of the faces of UFC for about the last year now. Then at number two on my top five upcoming UFC fights, Kamaru Usman versus Leon Edwards. That's going to be on August 20th in Salt Lake City for UFC 278, and that's going to be for the welterweight championship. Currently, Kamaru Usman, he is the welterweight champion. He's really just in my opinion, Usman is the best overall fighter in the league right now. I mean, as far as men go, just because he is great standing up. He's got great boxing skills. He's got great kickboxing skills, but he can ground and pound like a motherfucker too. He has knocked guys out, and he has also submitted dudes. So Usman, he is by far, in my opinion, the most well-rounded fighter in UFC, and he's definitely exciting to watch as well. Leon Edwards, I also have not seen this guy fight yet, and if I have, I just don't remember it. I think he's definitely going to have his hands full with Usman, because Usman at this current point in time in his fighting career, I think he's like at his peak. And, I feel like at this current point in time, he really can't be beat. So it's going to take a perfect fight from Leon Edwards, which don't get me wrong, that can happen. I think it's going to take a perfect fight from Edwards to even have a chance against Usman. Then at number one on my top five upcoming UFC fights, it is Juliana Pena versus Amanda Nunes. And this is for the women's bantamweight title. This is actually going to be the second matchup between the two of them. This is taking place actually next Saturday, July 30th, in Dallas for UFC 277. And this is a rematch from, I believe they fought in December. And what a fight this was. So the second showing should probably be even better because these two bitches went in. First of all, I'm a huge Amanda Nunes fan. She is such a spectacular fighter. She is, just like I was talking about Usman and how he has an all-around game, Nunes is one of the best all-around fighters because she can ground and pound too, but man, her boxing skills, she will knock a motherfucker out. Some of the fights that I've watched of hers are just super exciting, from the time she beat the absolute shit out of Ronda Rousey. I mean, she made Ronda Rousey want fucking retire. That's how bad she kicked her ass, knocked her ass out in the fucking first round, just wouldn't let up and just absolutely annihilated her. And she also annihilated Holly Holm, who's another spectacular fighter. Great boxing skills and kickboxing skills. And Nunes fucking kicked her ass in the face and knocked her ass out. But then also against Juliana Pena, even though Nunes ended up losing the last fight, it was a battle from the jump. First of all, you got to give it up to Pena. She's the current bantamweight title holder, of course, because the last fight both of these two had was against each other, and it was for the title. And so Pena is the title holder right now, and she was not scared at all. She was ready to go, and like when it seemed, she got Nunes exactly where she wanted her in this fight. Like the first round, it was very close. It kind of seemed like it went to Nunes. But then the second round, Pena came right out and was just throwing the punches like no other. And she actually just ended up, what she ended up doing was wearing Nunes out. And then she ended up getting her into a guillotine, I believe. That wasn't the end result, but she got her in the grappling position, and she ended up getting her to submit in the second round. Which was just crazy because, you know, Nunes hadn't lost before that in many years. So, in that fight, one of the best fights, hands down, I've ever watched for sure. So I'm very looking forward to, round two next weekend in Dallas. Wish I could see that, up close and personal, because I'm guaranteeing this is going to be a very good fight, because I have a feeling Nunes is going to want to get some revenge. She doesn't seem like the type who's going to be losing two in a row. She got caught off guard in the last one, because you could tell she was ready for it, but you could tell that once it started, the fight started progressing, Pena just started running away with it, and she really worked Nunes so she lost her legs and she couldn't fight anymore. And it was really something else to see. And so I'm sure Nunes has rewatched that fight, rewatched the tape, and I kind of have a feeling she's going to come back and she's going to get her title back. But we'll see what happens. I probably will talk about it again next week, since that's when it takes place, next Saturday. But I definitely, in my personal opinion, I'm so looking forward to that fight, and it's definitely by far the number one UFC fight upcoming, with with what they've got scheduled so far, where I think that's going to be a great fight, especially judging from the last one. All right, so we finally, you know, baseball finally got back into gear last night. So we're going to have some, we've got some baseball this weekend. We've got a UFC fight this weekend as well. It's not a title fight, but it's probably going to be a good one as well. So enjoy the weekend of sports because we finally have it back. It was really difficult to try and get through this week without any sports. But you know, hey, sports fans, we made it. And now shit's going to start getting real because football season is right around the corner. And you know, that's the time of year for the majority of us sports fans. We love us some football. So training camp kicks off for the most part on Tuesday, but we still got baseball and UFC this weekend. So enjoy the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you guys on Monday.